Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
This is Adam Mixon with the Ministry Collaborative. I'm sitting here with my colleagues, Melanie Marsh and Amy Valdez-Barker, and we're kind of reflecting over our recent blog post and some of the conversations we've been having with the Ministry Collaborative about where we're finding hope, where we're finding tension. What are we finding that still matters in ministry at this point? And also against the backdrop of we're in an election year and we're probably all bracing a bit for what's going to happen and what the world is going to look like for us in the next year. So I want to start by talking to Melanie. We shared some time in a cohort called How Can We Sing?
Yes.
Back during the pandemic, which was really centered around pastors who served in context where they were a minority pastor serving in a predominantly white context.
Right.
And Melanie is one of those people. She served a church in Florida.
Yeah. So in 2019, my family and I moved from Cleveland, Ohio, where I'd been associate pastor at a church up there, down to Atlantic Beach, Florida, which is a small suburb right on the Atlantic Ocean in Jacksonville. It was the summer of 2019 when I took the call to go down there. And right away, before I even set foot in town or in the church, it became very clear very quickly when the PNC started to present me as the candidate that there was some strong resistance to my being the candidate that they had chosen to come and serve this church as their senior pastor. First time a woman had ever held that role, first time a person of color had ever held a pastoral role in that church at all. And it became obvious as they went through the light stages of the process of the voting and the presentation of the candidate that there was a not majority contingent, but a large contingent of people connected to the church that were going to do everything they could to stop me from being the pastor of that church. Long story short, we went through two rounds of voting on my candidacy. The first round of voting, the vote was yes by 20 votes out of a congregation of 500 people,
wow.
600 people. And the losing side kind of said, well, clearly they cheated.
Wow.
And this is in 2019, before the 2020 election.
Wow.
So they demanded a second vote. And by some maneuvering with the presbytery and in the congregation, they got the second vote 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later. And the second time they voted, the vote was yes again by 4 votes.
Wow.
And every pastor I have talked to, every person in a church, every elder, every wise person that I consulted with and talked to during this time was like, no one in their right mind would take a call where they were voted in by 4 votes to a congregation. And I felt that very deeply in that moment because I was not there for any of this voting process. I think when the chair of the PNC called me that night after the congregational meeting had started at noon that day and had gone till like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, he called me and he told me, and he was so excited. He was like, the vote was yes. The vote was yes. And then I was like, well, what was the final vote tally? And he was like, yes by 4. And I was like, I'm going to have to call you back.
Wow.
And I just hung up the phone and I was in the grocery store with my 1-year-old child at the time. He was in the cart and I just sat down on the floor of the grocery store and just cried because I did not know what to do. I had already quit my job. We had already moved to Florida. We were living in this limbo of like, am I going to have a job? Am I not going to have a job? I'm the primary breadwinner of my family. I don't know what to do. This does not feel like a healthy or safe environment to go into. And I told him I was going to need to think about it. And I took a couple of days and I talked with everyone I trusted. I talked with my pastor's cohorts. I talked with my friends. I talked with my minister colleagues. And I talked with my little brother, who's 2 years younger than me. So he's, you know, like still an adult, very wise dude. And he was like, you know what? That vote was yes. That vote was yes twice. And it's not the church that's calling you to this work right now. It's God.
Wow.
And God said yes twice to you going to this church. And I think whether you like it or not, whether they like it or not, God wants you to be there. And I was like, dang it.
Wow. So your condition kind of like a first responder, run toward the flash.
Oh my gosh.
Run toward the commotion.
I never wanted to be in that role, honestly. But I didn't feel like I had a whole lot of options at that moment. And I was like, all right, God, you and me are going into this all-white church to serve it as the pastor. And it was a whole world-changing experience for me and for the congregation. I was there for 3 years, 2019 to 2022. So through the 2020 election cycle, through the whole
pandemic,
George Floyd and the consequences of his death in the midst of the pandemic in northern, eastern Florida, an hour south of the Georgia border in Jacksonville. And it felt like 20 years, those 3 years of ministry.
Man, I have a laundry list of questions to
ask
you.
Let's talk about it then, my friend, because I have lots of things to say.
Melanie, my heart goes out to you because I can only imagine what those moments were like, especially as a woman of color and the first woman. I've been in those spaces. And so clearly it was a calling. How did your soul survive through that time?
Oh, man.
And how did you walk with the soul of the congregation in that time?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing I knew I had to do was just find some way to kind of like show my humanity to this congregation. And I mean, the thing that I have to say is the staff and the PNC were 100% solidly in my corner the entire time. In fact, they, both of those entities, the staff that were there and the people who remained on the PNC after the vote took place, because a few walked away after the votes took place and after everything that kind of unraveled there at the end of the process, it felt like we had gone through some significant trauma together. Like we were trauma bonded hardcore after that experience. But they were like, we knew the moment that we met and after we had been together in our conversations that you were the right person for this church. And so it just is going to be a matter of showing the rest of the community a way to get beyond their fears and beyond their prejudices to see you as the human being, the amazing, called by God, human being that you are. And so that kind of became our project of just learning to lead by example in seeking out the humanity in people that are very different from you and have very different viewpoints and very different perspectives. And the funny thing is, I think when it came down to it, a lot of people wanted to say they thought I was going to be this like wildly liberal coming in to like ruin their church and undo all of the things that they've ever had or wanted. And I didn't do that. I didn't do that. And I also didn't come from like a very different background from a lot of them. I was like, I might have my views of politics or whatever, but that doesn't mean that that's what I lead with when I preach and when I'm leading a congregation. My parents are conservatives. My mom is a conservative. Mm. And they were like, well, why didn't you just say that in the first place? I'm like, well, you didn't give me a chance. You had already decided who I was before I came and walked in the door.
That's fascinating. You said a couple of things that I want to tug on. First of all, I don't want to assume the obvious, but it seems like you entered into a context where politics were well upstream to theology.
Definitely. Yeah.
So you got to see that kind of up close of how the outside influences what is the inside or what we would call our church or whatever.
Yeah.
Which makes me, and you've kind of hinted at it already, want to touch on the way that you took up the responsibility of forming people or contributing to their formation by embodying something. You said leading by example.
Right.
Again, I'm fascinated because I want to know what your sermon sounded like. I want to know, how did you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think a lot of my sermons, like the one that comes to mind immediately is the sermon that I preached, Seek the Welfare of the People with Whom You Have Been Placed.
Mm-hmm.
And the sermon title was Love the Ones You're With. And it's like, just watch me love you. I'm going to love you even if we don't agree. I'm going to love you even if we butt heads. I'm going to love you even if you can't see my humanity. I'm going to always be lifting yours up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bloom where I'm planted, wherever that is. And I'm going to see that the rest of us thrive together as well. And I think that really shocked people. That surprised them.
Mm-hmm. And did you see any movement there, any softening?
Yes, definitely.
What was the tenor of your relationship with the people before you transitioned out of it?
They were devastated when I left. So it was so funny because, like, it was such an uphill climb just to get into the position. Months of contention. Half the congregation, or maybe not quite half the congregation, kind of walked away. It was like, at least on paper, like a 900 or 1,000 member church before I got there. By the time I left, it was closer to 600 or 700 members. And a lot of people just didn't even want to engage in the conversation. But the ones who stayed, we saw this like very gradually, this shifting of their perspectives on things. And even the people who I felt like were my most, the ones who had the hardest time with me being there, were still like, by the time I left, were like, you have really changed who we are as a congregation. I remember one of my very first session meetings that I moderated for them, one of the younger adults who was a session member brought up this idea of becoming a Matthew 25 congregation. So Matthew 25 is an initiative of the PCUSA that focuses on eradicating systemic poverty, eradicating systemic racism, and building vital congregations. And so they said, how could the church, how could the PCUSA focus on such contentious things as racism and poverty? And we're not going to address that because that's too political. By the time I left, I think 2 weeks before I left, the last session meeting, the session adopted Matthew 25 as a program for the church, and they have taken it and run with it now. They're holding a homeless outreach in the church to this day and inviting people in that would never have even been allowed to be a part of the community during the time that I was there and the times before, which I think is really interesting. And every time that something happens within the church, I'll get little messages from my former colleagues and they'll be like, this is something that we're doing and we never could have done this if it hadn't been for you.
Wow.
I mean, even though it was really painful and I was sad to leave because I felt like there was a lot of potential that was missed out on, It is affirming to see the ways in which the church did transform, even if it's shade of a tree that I will never get to sit under. I know that I helped like plant that seed and that it has grown.
So what then, Melanie, led you to the transition?
Well, I think that 3 years in that space, even though now I can look back and see all the progress that was made, it felt like the progress was happening far too slowly with far too much difficulty for me to feel like it was life-giving for me. So an opportunity arose for me to go to kind of a dream church in South Florida, in Miami, a very multicultural church right in the heart of South Miami, where it felt like we aligned a lot more closely on our theology and outlook on the world. And they called me and asked me to be their pastor. And so I took the job and went. I think that a lot of people at the Jacksonville church thought that I was going to be there, like many of their other pastors, for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. And when that didn't happen, it was hard on all of us. We all went into that process thinking that it was going to be a very long-term pastorate. And that just wasn't meant to be. But I think the right things happened.
Yeah. There are a couple of things I hear you saying. Number one, uncovering an aspect of pastoring that few of us would celebrate. The part where you are managing tension.
Yeah.
Which requires an embrace of it.
Yeah.
How did you take care of yourself?
Actually, honestly, my ministry collaborative cohorts were a big part of that. I was a part of one that I started up in Cleveland that was all female ministers who were heads of staff.
Amy Miracle.
Amy Miracle. That's right. Shout out to Amy Miracle.
Okay.
And that was a lifeline for me during that time, for sure. And also lots of therapy.
Wow. When you were telling your story and you were talking about your transition and how devastated they were.
Yeah.
That's an amazing sign. And I hope this doesn't sound whatever, but it made me think about Nanny McPhee.
Oh, totally.
Where
totally.
She gives that speech. She says, when yep. you need me and don't want me,
I
must stay.
Yep.
When you
yep.
want me and don't need me, I gotta go.
I think I used that. I might not have been in my sermon like toward the end, but I think it was in my letter to the session. I used that quote and people were like, yes, yes. No, I'm so sad. But yes, you're so right. You're so right.
Wow.
Yeah, you're not the first to make that connection.
I just applaud your ability to know yourself too. Mm. And to Thank know you. That you had given what you were supposed to give in that space to those people
yeah.
for that time. And unlike some of us who want to stand and watch the plant grow and see our dreams realized, the courage and the selflessness of being able to say, you know what?
Yeah.
It's time to go. You could give a clinic to the rest of us for that alone.
Well, it was a learn as you go from being thrown into the deep end of the ocean, for sure.
Melanie, thank you for your time in this. This has been a great gift to hear about how you've endured, and we hope to hear more from you as we learn more about what it takes to stay, especially when we're having increasingly turbulent times across mission and ministry.
Thank you, Melanie.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations
committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.